Hello and welcome to Over the Edge. This episode features an interview between Bill Pfeiffer and Deepak Chaudhary, the lead for Intelligent Edge Solutions at Accenture, where he's focused on driving digital transformation, modernization, and platform development, particularly emphasizing intelligent edge computing, data analytics, and AI at the edge. In this conversation, Deepak and Bill dive into mirrored consumers, digital twins in the retail space that mimic consumer behavior. They also discuss the complexities of digital transformation and some of the challenges being tackled with edge technologies in retail. But before we get into it, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
Over the Edge is brought to you by Dell Technologies to unlock the potential of your infrastructure with edge solutions. From hardware and software to data and operations, across your entire multi-cloud environment, we're here to help you simplify your edge so that you can generate more value. Learn more by visiting dell.com/edge for more information or click on the link in the show notes.
And now please enjoy this interview between Bill Pfeiffer and Deepak Chaudhary, the lead for Intelligent Edge Solutions at Accenture.
Deepak, thanks so much for joining us today. I think this is going to be a really fun conversation, and I'm looking forward to hearing your perspectives on what's going on at the edge and what you're seeing. You've got such a great view coming in from the Accenture side.
Thanks, Bill. I'm very excited for this conversation and looking forward to the conversation today.
So it's always great to start with kind of some background, and we like to go deep background. How did you get started in technology? What brought you into where you are today?
Yep, it's a long story. I born and brought up in a very small town outside the capital of India, New Delhi. And when computer was far-fetched, not available in that time, when I was growing, there was always a computer classes in my school. And I always loved to go and try few programming equations and trying to solve small to learn computer programming. And that time, C programming was very much popular in those days. And I was very excited using the pointers and all. And half of the time I used to play video games on the computer. That was very fascinating to me all the time. Not very specific that I will be a technology guy in my life. My parents were in totally mechanical engineering business, small business people. And they sent me to be engineering college to learn mechanical engineering. And I kind of not interested in mechanical, but in India, when you're growing in a small town, you asked what your parents asked to do. You're going to be a mechanical engineering. Mm-hmm. And one day you will handle my business of mechanical engineering. Mm-hmm. And my mom used to always think that I will be a doctor one day. So that's never happened. And but during the engineering time, after first year of my engineering, I've been asked if with the grades, if you have a good grade marks on the first year, they offer you, if you are interested having a change of your grade, you want to move from mechanical to computer science, or you want to move into electronics and telecommunication. And at that moment of I've been offered and I took electronics and telecommunication, and I moved away from mechanical. I have not told my parents that I moved away from mechanical. And when second year, half semester, when my results came for the half year, then my parents saw that I am not anymore in mechanical engineering because first year is common for any trade. And they were upset about it. But as the year passed where I am today and what I'm doing and what I'm chasing for my life, they're very proud of it. And that's how I came to technology. After finishing engineering, I got a job offer to work for Motorola as a consulting company. And what fascinated me there, because during those days of early 90s, I would say cellular phone was a big deal to be early, late 90s and to early 2000. There were 2G was in the game plan, CDMA, 1G. And it was always fascinating that how people talk on the phone wirelessly. And that job, which offered me as a college graduate to do training in understanding the mobile phone industry, how mobile phone talks to the cellular tower, how cellular tower talks to the phone, how those channels and all very deep, detailed technical was exciting me. And I didn't know that I get excited with that technical part of it, but I going with my step by step of my career, and I picked up and enjoying the technology since then.
Mm-hmm. Back when it was just a phone app, all you did was talk on it.
Yes.
Texts were still brand new. And now look at us. Wow. So working at Accenture, right? I would imagine I, as a customer, would never call you if I have a dozen servers to deploy. I would call you if I want to transform my business or, you know, radically change things, re-architect from the ground, something large. What sort of projects land on your desk? Why do customers call you?
I think that's a very good question. And that's what I love about my job daily, because when customer calls Accenture or come and work on a project, they just don't call us for a very normal, ordinary projects. They call us for a new technology in the field, outside in the world. And they know that maybe Accenture may not have the answer for that new technology because it's new for everybody in the field. But they do feel that Accenture processes, procedures are very well defined and experienced, that they can nail down how to understand this new technology and whether that technology also will work for the client or not. They come as a relationship with a partner to work together to solve a problem for a new technology. And that's excites me every day, because every day we think that what is the unique problem we have and how we solve in a unique way.
But do they come with a problem or a technology or a goal? What do customers actually ask for? What sorts of things? So I'm always interested, right? We're talking about edge computing, and I'm fairly convinced that nobody wants the edge as such. Nobody says, I want me some edge. Can you deliver that? They're looking for a business result or a new technology implementation or a customer experience, or there's something kind of downstream from that. And edge is just one of the ways that we execute on that.
No, very good question. I think, Bill, you're really going in the right direction. So what customer comes, they don't come to us that I need that technology. I need that very cool, shiny stuff. Mm-hmm. They come to us with a problem, with the challenges in their own landscape, the current landscape they're seeing. I will give you an example here and to explain that how it works. If I'm talking to my retail customers, they're coming to me, they're not asking me that they need a shiny device in the retail store. They are coming to me how that shiny device can solve my challenges and pain points. For an example, how I can improve shrink. Shrink is a big problem right now in retail. If you know, we are losing more than $112 billion every year based on the research done last year in shrink, which is approximately 1.6% of the revenue average in the industry, retail industry.
And thin margins, so that's hard.
That's very consistent. It's not this year. 2023, 2022, you can see the NRF research, it is 112. In 2021, it was 99.3 billion. So it's not getting better. It's getting worse. And if I touch here shrink, let me give you an example of shrink. We are talking about shrink is a big word in retail. Shrink can be a loss of a property or a value in terms of dollar at happening something in the store. It can be a loss happening because of processes are not correct. It can be happening because of a vendor fraud. It can be happening because of loss happening because of employee theft. It can be a consumer shoplifting type of happening. And it can be an organized crime, which is the biggest percentage right now in retail, that organized crime is really chipping a lot of shrinkage. So when we talk about shrink, is a big word in retail. And when the customer comes and say, I have a shrink problem of 1.6% or 1.2% or 2.4% in my whole revenue, I think to discuss that and to understand and discover where the problem resides, and then we can talk about what technology, what kind of landscape we can work with that in a strategy point of view. So we think in the lens of customer, what are the issues and what driving those issues first, understanding, and then before we think about the technology on our table.
How much evolution have you been seeing in terms of what customers are asking for, what they're looking for over the past, I don't know, say 3 to 5 years? We know, you know, things are digitizing and modernizing and changing. Customer demands are tighter. Customer experiences are better over the last couple of years. Where are you seeing those changes? What sort of evolution have you felt in your time working with customers?
Huge. I think it's a day and night. When you look back between around 3 to 5 years of experience or 10 years ago, the projects we used to work with the client and solve the problem is very waterfall area. Customer is here and A position and customer want to go to B. And we know what is a path to go to B. And it will take 3 years. It may take 5 years of transformation. And we know how we're going to move. If there is another point C needs to become in the way, it will be always happen after point B. But in today's technology is changing every 6 months. Every new update or new changes are coming in the technology every 6 months. So we have to be very agile with our approach. And what customer is asking today in 6 months may change. And we have to adapt very quickly on those changes. So even you have a long-term digital transformation project, but we always do iteration view of every 3 months, 6 months, what we're giving and what is our decision point after 3 months or after 6 months on that phase, on that modular delivery, that what is our next phase will dictate on. So every second delivery or third delivery depends on what are the results we are seeing on that current delivery. So it's very agile based. That next step is our very focused on result-oriented approach.
I can't imagine trying to come up with a three-year project plan in today's environment and then stick with it. So yeah, that makes sense. I mean, constantly reevaluating and checking in and showing, you know, minor successes along the way and more about the journey. So jumping tracks, if I may, you recently posted an article on LinkedIn about some work at Accenture regarding mirrored consumers. It takes us into more of a retail focus and gets us into a digital twin conversation, which is really cool. It's not one that I've thought too much about in terms of the retail space. We tend to think about that in digital cities, manufacturing, things like that, things that are more, you know, here's a fixed environment, mimic that. But that paper said a rapid acceleration in emerging technologies will challenge how customers are defined. That's really interesting. And it exposes, like, there's a whole conversation behind that. How do we challenge how customers are defined? What's changing about the definition of a customer as we move forward? That's such a cool conversation.
Yep, you have touched a very favorite topic of mine, and that article being published by my colleague in retail industry. And I was very much impressed the way they have thought about it. So the term we use in this article called mirrored consumers. So these are the, I think I want to share what is mirror consumer in that article point of view. Mirror consumers are the digital representation of our customers' profile, persona. And that profile is being derived from first or third party data points. Maybe it can be a wearables, it can be a sensors, it can be a history, haptic technologies we're using. And understanding by that, the consumer through a mirror consumer, we can understand that what will be the next step of consumer journey in day life. I will give an example. I'm a consumer who always wear Fitbit or a Apple Watch. I try to run 4 times a week, 4 miles, 5 miles running. And it means I run average around 20 to 25 miles per week. And I must be running with the running shoes. And with that mileage of my running, I know that in 6 months or 7 months, I need a new running shoes every 6, 7 months. So this is the driving data points which are available through my wearables, through my outside. And that can be great. My personal profile that I will be always looking for a new shoes in the market. And now this is my mirror consumer definition. Let's go back how we are creating a new market for changing the world of landscape of marketing and consumer. There are curators, AI curators. We can call it AI bots. And they are changing the whole marketing and selling landscape. Suppose there are two types of curators. One are consumer curators, AI curators like me, who are checking the website, who are wearing the shoes, and then they are creating that I will be looking for a shoes. But there are curators from a business point of view who are collecting this data, information about a consumer. And it means that consumer never even thought about buying shoes, but business knows that in within 1 week, I have a time period that I will be buying that shoes. So with this mirror consumer profile, business already know that I am already in the market to buy shoes. Before I think as a consumer to want to buy, business are ready to ship me or pitch me a new product, which I will be looking forward in few weeks or certain time period.
So you mentioned this idea of curators. There was also the mention of collectives, groups of consumers that purchase together or in similar patterns, and potentially multiple layers of compensation that retail establishments may need to start thinking about. How do you compensate curators? How do you collectively bargain with collectives? And again, that challenging how customers are defined is a really interesting concept, that it's more like layers of customers or layers of access to customers. And that's a really interesting conversation about the shifting buying patterns that you can get because you can access larger data sets and customers can access larger data sets. And it's all sort of part of that larger data operation. It's a very interesting conversation. Can you talk a little bit about what you see as the customer collective side of that conversation?
Indeed. Again, communities plays a significant role in influencing a certain amount of decision happening in the market. Mm-hmm. A group buying a certain type of product, which is more sustainable, focused, and that group can influence more people to buy that sustainable focused products. And mm-hmm. using that data set, we can influence our AI creators that kind of product can be very much influencing. And that's in that way that data set can help to market to certain individual who are very sustainable focused product always. And we can change the market trend in that way. And again, AI has to do a right job. Everybody has to use AI in a very responsible manner. What products we are buying and what products we are influencing it. And all companies, whether businesses or people who are creating this kind of AI curators, should be working very responsibly how they want to market these products. It's a very fine line how mm-hmm. we do selling and how we do marketing using AI.
Yeah, it's one of those things that as a consumer, you get better service and much more customized offerings. But if you go a little too far as a seller, it starts to feel very creepy and surveillance-y, and we don't want that. So it's a really, really tough line to walk. But if you walk it right, wow, it's just magical. And this is all built on this idea of digital twins. Again, you know, from a manufacturing, I tend to think of them in terms of manufacturing, emulating large pieces of machinery. And, you know, how should the machinery be operating based on its current physical stats? Does it match how it should be operating? No. What's the difference? What needs to change? But then applying that to people is fascinating. And especially the layers of, right, the individual consumers, the curators, the collectives, the layers of how all of the buying behavior could happen or should happen. And, you know, diffing that, finding the differences, the similarities and the differences in the actual execution. So how do you create these digital twins to mimic consumer behavior?
Yeah, I think it's what we were talking about is very similar to digital twin. So digital mm-hmm. twin is a set of processes, how we create it. We need to understand the data and data acquisition for that digital twins, what kind of data we are generating, what are the sensors or IoT devices or users generating the data, means how we get the data first, and then how to understand the data. before we created digital twins. So there's a set of process. Once we collect the data and once we understand what is the good data out of data to create a digital twin, and then we create a model of on that data, which gives a sense to the data, the how the data will be used, and create some actions on the real-time actions on the data, like an algorithm or AI model on that data. So once we create data, and once we understand the quality of data and creating a model of it, then we create the physical aspect of that digital twin, where we connect all the sensors, IoT sensors, the edge devices in the field. And then feeding those data from IoT sensors, edge devices to the models we create on a digital twins, that's how we create a persona of a campus, of a university campus, a manufacturing floor, a smart city digital twins. So that's how we're creating. And then the last two steps, I feel the most important thing is how we create the visualization and user interface of that digital twin. That's very important aspects how the digital twins can be created and successful.
So it's very data heavy. It's very processor heavy, creating it. I would imagine that running a digital twin is also very compute heavy. That can't be a lightweight process, I would imagine. How do you use them then? Is this getting down into, are we already to the point that we can get down into tactical things? Hey, this person's in the store. It looks like they're about to leave. Let's give them a 10% off coupon and see if we can get them to stay. Or, you know, make custom offers while people are in store, or directing people in store to help with a particular thing that's causing confusion or something like that? Or is this a higher level thing that it's, you know, larger campaigns to watch in aggregate all of the different consumer types, or both? Is it, you know, it's a whole continuum of stuff and it's all within the art of the possible? Where are we with the art of the possible, I guess, is the real question there.
No, I can give you an example of digital twins in two different verticals. Let's take example of retail. We have a retail digital twin in a mall or in a supermarket. In that digital twin, we have the whole supermarket retail store, and we have consumers inside the store. We have employees inside the store, and that's a real-time digital twins, and it's telling the real-time digital twin of a supermarket how many customers are there in a real time at a given time on the shop floor? How many employees are there in the supermarket at a given time in real time information? And by looking at that digital twin view, visualize real time, we know what each customer is doing. Customer is picking something from a shelf. Customer is picking from a grocery items. Other customers picking from something produce. Some customer talking to the sales executive. Some customers just hanging in the aisles and reading and looking for the information. That customer information on the shop floor by real-time digital twin, we will know what each customer is doing. Is a customer need help, or customer is already find what he was looking for? And what employees doing, employees fixing the shelf, they're talking to the consumer, they're moving things here, there. And with that digital twin knowing what's happening, we can create alerts within that digital sensors devices that, hey, the one customer is sitting on a shop floor for 15 minutes and he's moving around on the aisles, but he or she must be looking for some help. So we can create a real-time alerts to employees or store manager that particular customer on aisle number 18 needs some help. And I think that's how digital twin can help you to improve the efficiency of your retail store, of your supermarket. Also, digital twins can also get you a sensor data from your freezers that somebody left the freezer door open for certain time. One kid with the consumer came and he left the door open, and now the energy consumption from the freezer goes bad because the door left. Knowing that sensor of thermostat and doors opening and closing on the digital twin can give us a real-time alert to store manager that particular aisle, that particular door of the freezer is open, please go and close. With that real-time information coming, we can improve the efficiency and energy consumption of a supermarket by monitoring very well in a real time. So that's another example. We have improved the customer experience because now we know the customer who needs the help. We improve the energy consumption of it. We are also checking who are the customer, what they're picking from the store by RFID and computer vision technology. And we can also control the shrink there that, okay, certain customer have picked up 5 items or 8 items from that. And when he or she goes to the point of sale, we know that customer picked up 10 items. If he or she is not scanning the 10 items, it means there is a loss happening, some kind of, or something issue there. That's third, that we improve the retail loss prevention there. Fourth, if something spilled on the aisle, a camera, computer vision tell, inform the store manager, there is something spill on the, and we need to clean it before some employees or customer fell on it. And that will create a lot of a liability issue. So this is fourth, that we have improved the store operations so quickly and create a much better customer. So a digital twin itself solves a lot of problem, efficiencies, energy efficiencies, automation in the store and shrink. That's one example of the retail store. And another example I was thinking of giving you, example of a manufacturing floor or an energy rig, oil refinery rig, where that we have the digital twins model for an energy rig company where a lot of sensors and cameras and computer vision, similar way of retail, are running and giving us a real-time information. We know that where each employee is working, if we're getting some alerts from some machinery that there is an oil leak happening, this machine is malfunctioning, by real-time input getting on the digital twin, we can help our employees to go and fix the problem in a real-time manner rather than by very manual approach. I think digital twins in a real-time help to improve our efficiencies and operations in a much better and automated way.
So as you were talking about the retail example, I was thinking in terms of customer personas and buying habits and things like that. But as you were continuing to dig into that, I was starting to think about employee personas, which I hadn't really thought of before. But I guess there are probably some employees that are better at stocking or better at interacting with customers or better just ringing people through the cashier and not really talking to people. And if you can find the strengths of employees and what they're best at and fastest at and makes them happiest, then they're going to have a better time working there, which then reduces turnover and churn and things like that. So that's, I mean, I guess once you build that digital twin, you can probably just find all sorts of new use cases and interesting capabilities that weren't there before. So that becomes, again, to your point of periodically checking in and pivoting as needed and such. How do you ever end an engagement like that and say, and now we're done? Or do your customers just say, and now we want to do this? And now we want to do this. What about this thing? And just sort of keep expanding and getting more efficient and getting smarter.
Indeed. I think one step, one door opens another door. It's always there when it's a good work is done. So technology is unlimited. The sky is unlimited from a technology point of view. You solve one use cases, you solve one challenge, and there's another challenge to solve with the technology. I will give you an example again. You solve the shrink problem. We're talking about a lot of shrink today in retail. You solve a shrink problem by using a cameras, computer vision, and RFID in the store by identifying who is your customer, he or she is carrying that merchandise because that has a RFID. It's giving me the analytics. But now the same camera in the futuristic, I can solve an inventory problem. Are monitoring the shelf monitoring RFIDs, how much it's coming in a real time by using an edge compute in the store. And by knowing that, how much shrink is happening, how much the inventory is happening, I can improve more by knowing who are the customer coming into the store by doing the geofencing, becoming a more hyper-personalized. When a customer comes to the store, I know Mr. A is in the store today. He or she have come after 15 days or 1 month. He or she must be looking that particular item which he or she has bought a month ago. To being in knowing which customer or who is in the floor, I can give much more hyper-personalization promotions right away. there was a survey happened, Bill, that when consumers like to have promotion received on their emails or on their phone while they are in the store, they don't want to receive promotion. 60%, there was a number, 67% of the consumer wants promotions or advertisement coming to them when they are in the store than at their home in the kitchen.
Wow.
So that's why the hyper-personalization works very well when the consumer is in the store and giving them a promotion, new coupons right away on their smartphones. And also, I will give an example of a grocery items. I'm a customer. I go sometime to grocery in the morning. I go sometime to grocery, go in the evening. And a lot of grocers like a Whole Food of the World or a Albertson or the Kroger, they have a hot bar. Mm-hmm. That hot bar is have a lot of food till 6 or 7 p.m. in the evening. But exactly when the 7:30 or 8 o'clock comes, that food is just waste if not being sold completely. So knowing hyper-personalization that customers are on the shop floor, I can send them a message, hey, I have a rotisserie chicken full. It's half price right now at 7 p.m. You want to take it? And that's called dynamic pricing. You have increased the customer loyalty and customer experience by giving the right price, half price. But not only, you improve the wastage and spoilage there of your food. So I think when technology works with the real world, we can create a fusion and recreate a lot of value in the business point of view, which is very hard to give a tag to customer experience, customer loyalty. And that comes with the right technology at the right time.
Mm-hmm. We generally hear the other side of dynamic pricing, the surge pricing. You know, there's a snowstorm coming. Everybody wants bread and milk. So that's going to be more expensive because we know we're going to sell out. As opposed to, you know, we're just about to clean up the salad bar for the day. So if you want a salad, you can help us clean it up for half off and, you know, get a salad before we take it away. And then you don't miss it. You don't then get to the salad bar and find out, oh, it's already been cleaned up 5 minutes ago. That's a great use of it and a very positive example, which is better than the other side. Very cool.
Yeah, and it seems like a very small uptick or small use case, but if you see in a big economic level, it gives you a lot of sales uptick. The customer is already fascinated and excited about that. I got a half price chicken, and it creates an additional loyalty to your customer. Means in a long run, you get much more uptick of sale. If you compare, if you have 1,000 stores and so many consumers, if you see overall cycle of the revenue, you increase your sale for that customer time to time.
Mm-hmm. And decreases waste, which is fantastic, especially when you're talking about like a grocery store that runs on such thin margins. Improving that margin even just a little bit is pretty fantastic for them.
And you improve, you checklist your sustainability part of it within the businesses, which is very important to show case that we are very much environment friendly and sustainable operations.
Cool. Okay. So getting into the challenge question portion of this, we didn't talk about generative AI, but that seems to, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's super excited about it. At this point, it's large language models for the most part. We'll get to the small language models where they're more efficient and focused. But right now, it's mostly large language models, very, very capable, but broad and power hungry, needs a ton of compute to operate. So I'm seeing some use cases for Gen AI for the edge, not running at the edge, but running in a centralized data center or cloud, something like that, just to enhance the experience that customers see at the edge. Have you seen, can you think of, do you use Gen AI at the edge or for the edge? Have you come up with interesting use cases today, or do you see any in the near term? What do you think about Gen AI as relates to edge type deployments?
Indeed. I think that's the right timing because if you have noticed in retail, there was a big show called NRF, National Retail Federation. Mm-hmm. It's one of the biggest retail show in the world. And in our office, we have showcased how we can do generative AI at the edge. And the new trend is coming up that definitely running a large language model of huge, big billions parameters takes a lot of compute. And doing those query outgrass really adds cost to the enterprise. And what we have seen, the new trend, that smaller models, large language model of 5 to 7 billion parameters, we can run on the edge devices in the retail store. And I will give an example. Suppose you are going to a supermarket, or you're going to a Walmart of the world, or you're going to the Target of the world, and you want to buy an iPhone, or you want to buy a cellular phone, not iPhone, just cellular phone. And instead of talking to the employees and asking for what phone will be the best for you, there can be a generative AI model running on a kiosk or a device where you can ask your questions, or you can type it that I am looking for a phone with this much capacity, I'm looking for this much camera, and I'm looking for this kind of, which has this kind of operating system. And boom, the generative AI model can give you latest and the best price range of that phone, instead of interacting with salesperson who or she or he will not be available until next 5 minutes or 10 minutes because they're entertaining other customers. So having this kind of devices running edge generative AI model, suppose you are going to a Costco of the world or any electronic appliance retail store, if you're looking for yourself a TV, let's say you're looking for a smart TV, you want to get that, I'm looking for a 65-inch TV, I'm looking for which has an OLED or LED, or I have this kind of features. You can ask that device this kind of your basic filter questions, and you can get a first top five choices, top three choices. What it helps, the consumer experience, that you don't need to wait and talk to the salesperson, because a lot of us consumers don't want to talk to the salesperson, get to the business straight. And this also solves the problem of lack of employees on the retail store, on the floor. Plus, this is one way of solving the problem in the retail and making your consumer happy. But other way also, you can do the same generative AI models, helping your employees. Because if you are Walmart of the world, or you have a Dick's Sporting of the world, daily we are getting hundreds of new products in the store, on the shop floor. And the speed of new products come on the floor. You cannot train your sales employee that fast every day about the new products. Giving this kind of devices which are running generative AI model at the edge for only retail specific, not for the whole enterprise, but just focus on products and all, a salesperson will be ready to answer any question. If a customer asks this kind of question, I'm looking for a TV, which is 65-inch, I'm looking for this much LED, I'm looking for this price range, and salesperson quickly type or ask the same question, help the customer quickly. So giving this kind of tools to the employees also increase the employee engagement and futuristic loyalty for the employees to work for that company, for the retail store. So this is another example where generative AI models running at the edge on edge devices are getting very popular.
So you're seeing these deployed now to help with like natural language queries for product selection and things like that, consumer interfaces, employee interfaces.
It is. It is in the play right now. A lot of companies already looking into how can we do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Super cool. I love it. Deepak, it's been great. We're coming up toward time. But I appreciate it. I love this. I mean, just sharing your experience, sharing your perspective, sharing what you've been hearing from customers. I mean, you interact with a lot of customers all the time, and a very different set than I do, for sure, in a different way. So I've learned several things. I've taken some good notes. I appreciate that. That's what this is all about for me. I hope listeners enjoyed it as well, but I definitely appreciate your time and your attention. Can you tell us, how can people find you online and learn more about what you've done and keep up with what you're doing?
Absolutely, absolutely. Very happy to be part of today's discussion. And for me to reach, they can reach me on my email, Deepak, D-E-E-P-A-K dot D, Chaudhary. My last name is very big, but C-H-A-U-D-H-A-R-Y, Deepak dot D dot Chaudhary at Accenture.com. And they can find me on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. This was fun.
It was fun. Thank you.
That does it for this episode of Over the Edge. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and a review and tell a friend. Over the Edge is made possible through the generous sponsorship of our partners at Dell Technologies. Simplify your edge so you can generate more value. Learn more by visiting dell.com/edge.